All right, so good afternoon, everyone. Looks like we have about 30 people and it is 2 o'clock, so we'll get started. Commissioner, before I turn things over to you, I just want to make one sort of sad announcement. I know many of you may have seen my email yesterday, but our board member and past president, Patrick O'Neill from Tata and Howard, passed away on Friday after a courageous battle with cancer. And so I did just want to recognize that for folks who may not have been aware. So we do definitely send our thoughts to Patrick's family and to his colleagues at Tata and Howard. So with that sad news, I will turn it over to Commissioner Suberg and we can get started.
Thank you, Jen. And my condolences also to the O'Neill family and to all of his friends and colleagues who worked with him. I'm pleased to be here again today for our monthly call on drinking water issues and responding to the COVID emergency. As you know, these sessions are recorded and we put a copy of the recording on our MassDEP website after they're completed so they can be a reference for people. We are joined by Kathy Baskin, our Assistant Commissioner for Water. We have Yvette DePisa from the Drinking Water Program, Damon Gutterman from the Drinking Water Program, Mike Maynard, the chair of our Board of Licensing. We have Stephanie Cooper, our Deputy Commissioner for Policy and Planning. And we also have representatives of each of our regional offices. I've seen a few of our regional directors and deputies, and drinking water chiefs. They joined because they recognized that it's important that we're all hearing the same things. And also if there are follow-up items that we begin working on them immediately. In a moment, I'm going to ask Jane Downing from EPA to join us. Again, we've had Jane with us, but before I do, I know there's been a lot of interest in vaccines that you know we've been talking about on these sessions, and we're very pleased that our colleague, Donna Lazarek of the Department of Public Health has been able to join us. I know her time is limited this afternoon, so I wanted to give the floor first to Donna and say thank you for joining us at DEP. And above all, thank you for joining all the water system operators on this call.
Thank you, Commissioner. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Great. Good afternoon, everyone. And I'm here to talk about COVID vaccine. I'm a public health nurse and worked with the immunization program at the Department of Public Health for almost 30 years and spent a lot of that time working on pandemic planning and influenza and was retired for a few years and came back to support the COVID vaccination program. And I'm really happy to be here to talk with you this afternoon. You know, we often say that after clean water, vaccines are the most important public health intervention that we have. So I sort of feel like we're kind of in this together, making sure that the residents of the Commonwealth are safe. I wanted to talk about COVID vaccine because I know that there are a lot of concerns and questions about the vaccine. So I hope this will be a real opportunity for you to get your questions answered and your issues addressed. I hope that you feel comfortable interrupting me, asking questions as I'm talking, because I want to really make sure that I'm getting to what you're most interested in talking about this vaccine. So please feel free to put questions in the chat. And I know some folks are monitoring the chat and we'll ask the questions for you. So just to set the stage and to talk about the seriousness of COVID disease, in the United States, there have been 30 million cases in the last year or so of COVID and resulting in 500,000 deaths. And in Massachusetts, our own state, in the last year, there have been 600,000 cases and 17,000 deaths. So this, we're talking about a very serious vaccine. And I wanna set that sort of stage as we talk about the vaccine itself. So we know that COVID disease, even though it's a relatively new disease for us, we know a fair amount about it now. We know it results in a range of illnesses. About half the people we think may be infected with COVID but not know it. They have no symptoms, which is fortunate for them. They're fine, they're walking around. But unfortunately, if they are infected, they can transmit COVID to other people who may not be so fortunate when they become infected. The single most important determinant of how sick people are, how likely they are to become sick, is age. So the older you are, the more your chances are of becoming seriously ill and perhaps requiring hospitalization and maybe even dying from COVID. As I said, 17,000 people in Massachusetts have died from COVID disease. And about the average age of people in Massachusetts who have been hospitalized with COVID is 64. So the older you are, the more your chances are of becoming seriously ill. But that's not to say that younger people can't become seriously ill. They do, and in fact, younger people have died from COVID. So this is a very serious disease for everyone. For the last year, until about December, this past December, really our tools to help slow down the pandemic was really social distancing, wearing masks, and washing your hands. And I think people, in Massachusetts particularly, have been pretty diligent about doing that. Most people are, following the recommendations, and I'm grateful to everybody who is doing that. But finally, in December, we've received another tool in our toolbox to fight this pandemic. And this is really important. Currently, we now have 3 COVID vaccines that have been approved by the FDA for emergency use authorization in the United States. And you probably are familiar with this. There's Pfizer vaccine, which requires 2 doses, Moderna vaccine that requires 2 doses, and the Janssen or J&J, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a 1-dose vaccine. And one of the things that's really important to remember about this is that all 3 vaccines are highly effective in preventing COVID-19. A lot of questions that we get about the vaccine is, how do we know the vaccine is safe? And I can tell you that vaccines go through more testing than any other kinds of medications, not just COVID vaccine, but all vaccines. Because unlike medications that are given to people who are already sick, vaccines prevent disease. And so we often, most of the time, are giving them to people who aren't sick. So we need to make sure that we're not giving them something that's going to harm them. So vaccines go through more testing than any other medicines. And as how the vaccines are tested is that usually after animal studies to make sure that they're safe in animals and are effective, they're given to small groups of people. And these people are watched very carefully to ensure that the vaccine is safe in people. And then they're given to a larger group of people with particular characteristics such as age, race, physical health, medical conditions that they might have to ensure that they're safe for everybody. During testing, the vaccine is given to tens of thousands of people. And the folks in these clinical trials are followed very carefully, both to see how effective the vaccine is and also to see what kinds of reactions people might have to the vaccines. And then the data are reviewed by the FDA and the Independent Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. And these bodies really look at the data and make decisions about how safe the vaccine is and who it should be administered to. One of the things that's different about COVID vaccine is how quickly the vaccine was developed. And part of this is because there was some new technology that was used for vaccine messenger RNA vaccines, the first 2 that were authorized, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. And although this technology hadn't been used in vaccines except in clinical trials, the technology has been around for decades. So the technology wasn't new. People knew a lot about it and they were ready to use it for vaccine development. As soon as the virus emerged, actually, people were working on vaccines as early as last March. Another thing is that governments invested a lot of money into the vaccine to support companies with their work. So there's a real private public partnership to develop these vaccines so quickly. Because it was a global pandemic, people knew that we really needed to get these vaccines out safely. And also another thing which was different from other vaccines is that there were many people wanting to be in the clinical trials. Usually it takes months to find enough volunteers to do large scale studies of vaccines that are being developed, but there was no shortage of volunteers for the clinical studies for these vaccines. And finally, because of the government investment, the companies that were developing the vaccines started manufacturing them even before they were authorized and could be used to vaccinate the general public. And just to, you know, so there were a number of vaccines in the pipeline and some, you know, some vaccines, like there was one being developed by Merck. Now all of them, you know, in the long run after the clinical trials showed that they were as effective and they all the vaccines had to be 50% effective in order to be authorized by the FDA or there were side effects to the vaccine. So for instance, Merck had a vaccine, they manufactured millions of doses, and then in the end weren't that vaccine was not authorized. And there are other vaccines in the pipeline, and some of them will be authorized and some won't, depending on the results of the clinical studies. So by December, we had authorization of two vaccines, and people started getting vaccinated in Massachusetts. Almost 4 million doses of the vaccine have been administered. And again, people are looking very carefully to make sure that vaccine given after the clinical trials in larger numbers of people, that the vaccine is still safe and effective. And two things that we learned from the studies and is being borne out as more and more doses are being administered to folks is that this vaccine is incredibly effective. It's 90%, 95% effective against serious disease and hospitalizations as compared to, for instance, flu vaccine, which is 40 to 60% effective depending on the year and the flu variants that are circulating. And yet we know that even if it's only 50% effective, there's so many deaths and hospitalizations that are prevented by the vaccine. But these vaccines are much more effective than flu vaccine. In fact, new studies, as there more data are coming in, showing that, suggesting at least that the vaccine is very effective in preventing any infection with coronavirus. And so it's decreasing the chance of spreading the vaccine to others. Are there any questions so far of people? Are there any questions from the chat?
No, we don't have any questions from the chat yet. If I might, you know, I also do have a poll to see how many people may have already gotten the vaccine or had trouble getting the vaccine. Would you like me to launch that as well? And we can see.
That would be great. Yeah, okay. I think that would be really interesting for folks.
All right, so I'm gonna give you a minute just to, hopefully you're seeing this poll pop up and you can be able to tell us if you've personally been able to get a vaccine appointment, if others in your utility have been able to get a vaccine appointment, or if you have employees in your utility who are refusing to be vaccinated. I know that was a concern that had come up with some of the wastewater groups. So if you have information on that, I'm sure we'd find that helpful as well. So got people responding and we'll just give it 1 second and then we'll display that. All right, let me end that poll and I will show you the results here. So it looks like 90% on the call have been able to personally get their vaccine appointment, and that 85% others have been able to get theirs. 35% indicate that there are employees who are refusing. About 50% said they're not sure. So looks like we've made progress in at least getting the folks on the call vaccinated. So that's good to hear. So I'll stop sharing that, and we can continue to monitor the chat.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be interested to hear, you know, for those of you that have concerns about the vaccine or what you're hearing from your employees, what kinds of questions they have or what kinds of concerns they have. I'd be really interested in hearing those. So I'll continue to talk a little bit about the vaccine, and hopefully there'll be some questions. So a couple of things I wanted to say is the vaccine takes about 2 weeks to be effective. So for two weeks after your first dose, people are showing, you know, protection against the coronavirus. And then after the second dose, 2 weeks after the second dose, if you're getting Moderna or Pfizer, or 2 weeks after the single dose of Janssen vaccine, you're considered fully vaccinated. And that's when we're seeing this, you know, 90, 95% effective against coronavirus. Because the no vaccine is 100% effective, it's still, and we don't know which individual might, for whom the vaccine might not be so effective, it's important that everybody continue to wear masks and practice social distancing, following the guidelines from CDC or the Massachusetts Department of Public Health in terms of what kinds of settings you can sort of relax some of these restrictions, such as if you're in a small group inside and everybody is fully vaccinated, you can, it's considered safe to interact with each other without wearing masks. But if there's anybody who's at high risk because of a medical condition or their age, or there's somebody as part of this group that's not fully vaccinated, it's really important to maintain social distancing and wearing your masks. I think there's going to be some things, some links put into the chat to help you find information that you can share with your employees, your colleagues, perhaps your family and friends, with information about the vaccine. It's available in a number of languages on the mass.gov website. The vaccine is free for everyone. Nobody should be charged. If anybody is charged anything for the vaccine, they should contact the Department of Public Health. I don't know how people are finding the process of getting an appointment to get the vaccine. There's information on mass.gov about how to register to get in the queue to get the vaccine. And I think they're moving through that queue fairly quickly. More and more vaccine is coming into the state every week. So although there's not enough vaccine for everyone yet, there will be eventually, and we encourage you to get into the queue to get your appointment.
We do have a couple of questions that have come in. I don't know if you want to
answer those at
this time. So I don't know, one is very specific to some certain side effects that a person has had since the Pfizer shot last Friday. They've been ill starting Saturday, yes. Very tired, upset stomach, body aches, headaches, but no fever. Is this normal?
So it would be considered normal side effects. Most people have some side effects after getting vaccinated. For most people, they're very minor. Mostly the most common one is soreness or redness at the injection site. But some people can have more systemic side effects, such as malaise, feeling really tired, that's been reported. And I'm sorry, what else? What other symptoms did this question?
Upset stomach, body aches, headaches.
Yes. Okay. So, and vaccinated on Friday. Usually these symptoms start within 2 days and last only 1 to 2 days. I'd say if, you know, you're not starting to feel better, you might want to contact your physician, your primary care provider. It may be related to the vaccine, and we would expect it to go away, you know, very shortly, these symptoms. It's also possible, you know, with so many doses being administered, that it's being administered to some people who would have gotten sick at that point anyway, coincidental. So definitely contact your physician, your primary care provider, if you're not getting better, if you're not feeling symptoms resolve.
We have another one. Will booster shots be needed at some point?
So that's a great question. And we don't know yet. It's hard to know how long immunity lasts because the vaccines haven't been available that long. So it's really taking it month to month and seeing how immunity lasts in people who, you know, were among the first vaccinated and in the clinical trials. But it's expected to be a fairly long duration. We're not really seeing indications that immunity or protection is waning over time. That's not to say it won't change. Like I said, the vaccines haven't been around that long. So it's still an open question whether both boosters will be needed. Are there any other questions?
Nope, that's it for now.
Okay. So I encourage you to visit mass.gov. Just Google mass.gov COVID-19, either COVID-19 or COVID-19 vaccine, to get information about the vaccines. And it's available in a number of different languages, if that would be appropriate for your employees. So I think I'm going to leave it at that for now. I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing to protect our water supply, make sure we have access to safe drinking water, and appreciate this opportunity to talk with you. I'll stay on for a little bit in case more questions come up. Would that be appropriate?
Sure. I think we have one more, which is, I guess, sort of a comment maybe for you to take back, but the mass.gov site was still very challenging to get through as of last week. Site would crash during signup process and after appointment was assigned and being held up for 15 minutes. After crashing, the appointment was lost. Experienced this multiple times. CVS and Walgreens were seamless.
So okay. That's okay. Both things are good to know. I hadn't heard that the new registration system was crashing. I wonder if, you know, the person who asked, I could ask the question, if I could ask, is this something that happened recently with the system
they
crashing?
They said last week.
Last week, okay, I'll definitely bring that back. Yeah, that shouldn't be happening. So I sorry that your experience was so difficult. I know I tried getting vaccines early on when I first became eligible, and it wasn't easy, but a new registration system has been put in place, and I'll bring it back that there's still problems with it for sure. And I'm glad to hear that you were able to get it at a pharmacy.
Great, thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Commissioner?
Great. Well, thank you very much. And as we noted at the beginning of the call, we are joined, as we are each time, by Jane Downing, head of the Drinking Water Program for EPA Region 1. Jane, any updates you'd like to provide to the group?
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Jen. And I hope everybody is enjoying the spring weather and getting hopeful for the future. So I do have updates. I have a lot of dates. So if all of you want to get a pen and pencil, that would be smart to do. And also Jen is going to put a lot on the chat. Let's start with training. Workshops coming up. There is a series of webinars conducted by the Office of EPA's Office of Research and Development. And the next one is April 14th from 2 to 3:30. It's actually about the nuclear power plant disaster in Fukushima, Japan. And the anniversary is actually 10 years ago. I don't know if you all remember that tragic episode, but we were worried about radioactive fallout even in New England. So if you're interested in that, it's April 14th. April 29th is the one after that. And going back to COVID, It's about COVID-19 PPE disinfection, and there are other webinars May and June. So if you're interested in this series of webinars, again, hosted by the Office of Research and Development, ORD, then you can go on the website and register for this, for the series, or one or two if you don't want all of them. The next one is something coming out on April 29th. It's out of the EPA Water Security Division. It's called Building a Resilient Water Sector Preparing for Supply Chain Disruptions. As you may remember, on previous calls, we've talked about the chemical supply chain, talked about things like carbon dioxide, liquid oxygen. So this is EPA putting on a webinar. Again, it's April 29th from 2 to 3 o'clock. And the link is in your chat. The next one is a reminder to everybody. There's a pretty significant deadline coming up June 30th. It's the deadline that is out of AWIA, America's Water Infrastructure Act. It's a deadline for medium systems to complete their emergency response plans and certify to that to EPA. It's also a deadline for small systems. We're talking about systems between 3,300 and 49,999. Small systems need to complete their risk and resilience assessment and certify that to EPA again by June 30th. So pretty significant deadline. There's a lot going on in this area. And if you need help, if you need training, you can actually get it online via EPA, and the link is in your chat. So if you've missed some of the training that has already been presented, you can go into this website and actually see the trainings. And that includes the vulnerability assessments, and it includes the emergency response plans. And finally, on the topic of cybersecurity, again, a topic that we have all talked about in previous calls, we're pleased to ask you to save the date of May 26th. EPA Region 1, we're working very closely in coordination with Mass DEP. Thank you, Commissioner. So we are going to be putting on a cybersecurity for New England for the water sector on May 26th from 10 to 12 p.m. So please save the date. A lot of people are helping us plan for that. Let's move into tools. For those who are interested in climate change, the CREATE tool, this CREATE tool has been around for a while. It has been updated to include a lot more on climate change impacts. So if you'd like to check out the CREATE tool, the CREATE, if you remember, stands for Climate Resilience Evaluation and Awareness Tool. I had to look at that because I couldn't quite remember it. So for climate change impacts, for vulnerability assessments, this is a pretty heavy duty tool that's available for you. And I think that if you will forgive me, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about lead. I know it's not a climate change, I know it's not COVID, but there are some very significant deadlines coming up on lead. We announced at the end of March that we were going to open up lead listening sessions available to the public. And the next two sessions, actually the first two sessions, begin on April 28th and May 5th. Available to the public, we're asking you to sign in for a 3-minute session or a talking slot. So that is public listening sessions. If you want to do that, then you would move into and sign up on EPA's website, www.epa.gov/safewater. In addition to those two public listening sessions, starting in May, we are going to hold community-focused virtual roundtables. So this is based on specific communities, bringing in local stakeholders. And also in June, there'll be roundtables for national organizations and national stakeholder organizations. So lots of opportunities to get involved in lead. And I will tell you, you may have been aware of the president's proposal for the America's Jobs Plan, which in his proposal includes an item of $45 billion to replace 100% of the lead lines. So lead is definitely going to be a priority. We'll see how that plays out. I encourage all of you, if you haven't already, to think seriously about your inventories, because there may be substantial funding coming your way. And I think that is it for now. Thank you for the opportunity, as always, Commissioner, and back to you.
Okay, Jane, thanks for the updates. And I know there's been some information on some of these sessions put into the chat by Jen while you were speaking. So appreciate your being here and joining us. Our other person that we always go to updates for is Mike Maynard, the head of our drinking water licensing board. Mike, any updates you'd like to provide to the group today?
Yep, just a few. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. We have a board meeting this Friday, and that's at 10 o'clock. The agenda will be posted to DPL at the DPL website later today. Another thing that's come up is this is a certification year for licensing. And the question has come up, will the Board of Certification waive TCH requirements? At this point, we are not going to waive, the board is not going to waive TCH requirements. And that is the same for wastewater. I talked to John Murphy. So the Drinking Water Board and the Wastewater Board has no intention at this point to waive TCH requirements. We will continue to monitor it. If it becomes an issue, then we'll readdress it. The other thing that's come up with the ABC exam, there are three new testing sites, and I pass those over to Jen, and she's going to post those. The new testing sites are Brockton, Chelmsford, and Danvers, and those should be open. I don't know if they're open yet, but they should be open very soon. So when you log on to take an exam, you'll have those three locations. The Townsend site is closed effective about a month ago. So you got three new sites, Brockton, Chelmsford, and Danvers. The board is also a number of things have come up at our board meeting concerning questions and particularly some outdated questions. And we're working with New England Mass Waterworks and a bunch of a few of the board members to change or to address those outdated questions on the exam, particularly as it relates to thrust blocker. So I'd like to reach out to New England and Mass and Andy Reid and DPL Council, who are reviewing those questions, to try to make the exam reflective of what the operators need to know. The second one is TECs, we're still receiving them, and Peabody Water Department has been issued two temporary emergency certs. And that's about it for me. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Appreciate the updates. So a couple of things that we wanted to touch on before we throw it open to any questions that you may have here live in this session. We are continuing to look at the financial pieces. As you know, there was COVID relief legislation passed in late 2020. One piece of it that we've been waiting to see next steps on is the $638 million. It was in one of the bills passed, I think, in late December. It's to grants to states to provide it, states and tribes to provide owners or operators of public water systems to help reduce arrearages and pay for rates charged to low income households that pay a high proportion of their income for drinking water and wastewater services. At this time, we've been staying in touch with our colleagues at the Department of Housing and Community Development, which, as well as our colleagues in the State Budget Office, waiting, you know, to see when the funding comes in, and then more detail on the criteria that will be applied for distribution. So we're keeping an eye on it. Jen, I know you've been tracking independently through MWWA, in touch with people. So you may have a more recent update than I do. So if you do, I might pause here and give you a chance to speak.
Sure, thanks, Commissioner. I think we certainly are interested in that $638 million, and I think there may have been another $500 million to mm-hmm. add to that. And certainly a lot of it hinges on the guidance that comes from the federal government, which I think has been what's sort of holding it up at this point. One point maybe for you to think about and bring back to the governor is, there's some concern, I'm losing track of the names of these programs, but the last one which said that it was, money to the municipalities that could be used on a host of things, one of which was water. Mm-hmm. There certainly is a concern among the districts here that they may not be eligible for any of that funding for water infrastructure because the money is going to the municipality itself. So I have been in touch with ANF about that just to see if maybe they can communicate back with their federal colleagues that, we do have independent districts, authorities, commissions that certainly could also use that money for water infrastructure investment, but may not have it be readily accessible. So just something for you to think of. That's something that's come up through our latest read of some of the funding packages.
Yeah, we will certainly take that back. You're right, there are different pots of money, and this was sort of a more general pot of money that talked about utilities and helping to reimburse for that. So we'll, again, we've been trying to make sure we're staying close, and we ask regularly, has the funding arrived? What kinds of decisions are made. So once, we'll put that on there as well. And we'll take our own look at it, in terms of the eligibility of districts versus municipal systems. So there are other, we did touch on the other pieces of legislation in the past. And then we're mindful of the fact that there, and Jane alluded to it, there's a big infrastructure bill that includes, significant funding for things like lead service lines, generally upgrading water, wastewater, and stormwater systems. There's money in there to monitor for PFAS and to address PFAS. So there's a lot of things in that legislation that's pending now in Congress that I'm sure we're gonna all be paying attention to and staying in contact on. We did get a couple of questions in advance, and if we have Yvette and Damon and Kathy here, if we need some more details. But one of the questions we got was backflow testing. What is our position on backflow testing and cross-connection surveys for 2021? Are you still in compliance if you only do one backflow test? The answer is this, and again, if any of the program people want to amplify, that's perfectly welcome, or if people want to ask follow-up questions. As non-residential facilities return to operating at some normal levels, public water supplies are expected to complete all surveys and testing according to the regulations, unless there is a documented pandemic-related reason for not conducting those distribution and public health protection surveys. This is our FAQ question for inspections on our website, repairs number 13. That's the position we're taking as we, transition hopefully back into more normal activities. We got another question on CCR requirements, and Jane, if there's any developments you want to jump in here, feel free. But the America's Water Infrastructure Act does have a provision for consumer confidence reports to be made and delivered twice a year by community systems serving over populations of over 10,000. It was to take effect in October 2020, but EPA is required to issue regulations to implement this provision. As of today, there are not yet regulations on this topic. And so as we understand it, for calendar year 2020s. The CCRs must be delivered once a year by the deadline of July 1st, 2021. So that's what we know about that. And we'll be monitoring, you know, as EPA's, you know, starts look, you know, moving forward and implementing it. But that's the answer for this year. And I think that's all of the questions we got in advance. So if there's anything that's come in the meantime, either through the chat or if people want to unmute themselves, I think we'd certainly welcome that.
Yeah, we have quite a bit of information sharing happening in the chat. So just encourage those folks to look at that question about how you sort of participate in those listening sessions without necessarily wanting to speak. And it looks like there may be a future link coming on those LCR listening sessions. And then Damon has posted some of the links in the chat. I guess maybe one other reminder is that annual statistical reports are due this week. And so I have heard from a few people already, Commissioner, that they've run their RGPCD numbers and are higher than they were in previous years. So just again, I'm sure you guys will be looking at that closely, but mm-hmm. the enforcement forbearance on RGPCD is probably something that we will need to talk about in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'll stay in touch with the water management to see who's gone up and who's gone down and what it all means. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing anything else in the chat. If anyone has a question that they aren't able to put in the chat, you can feel free to unmute. If you're on the phone, *6, ask your question. All right, I'm not seeing anything. So our next call would be May 4th.
Terrific. Well, we'll plan on being there. And we're looking forward to staying in touch on any number of these developments. And you know, once again, we appreciate the opportunity to share information here, and we remain fully committed to supporting systems as they're providing this essential service. You know, even as the pandemic response changes over time, so it's important for us to maintain this conversation. So thanks for arranging it, Jen, with us.
Yeah, no, thank you, Commissioner. And I suppose I should just comment too that the Mass Drought Task Force met this morning, and it's likely that we'll see some level one drought declarations for most of the state probably by the end of the week. That seemed to be the recommendation coming forward. So just as systems are on this call, maybe wanting to think about drought response as well, because the task force and National Weather Service and others are concerned about upcoming dry period that doesn't seem to lend itself to precipitation that might help us through the spring. So be on the lookout for that probably by the end of the week. All right. Well, thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Jane, Michael, and Stephanie. And thanks for getting the DPH representative on the call today to answer questions. And we will see you all on May 4th.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.